Hello, church. My name is Jane, and we will now be reading today's passage in the scriptures from John 11, 17 to 44. Please follow along in your own Bibles or on the screen. Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, but about 2 miles off. And many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. So when Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, but Mary remained seated in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying in private, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep. Now when Mary came to where Jesus was, she saw him. She fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who had opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there will be an odor, for he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips, and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." This is the reading of God's word.
Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to True North Church. For those that are new or visiting for the first time, we want to welcome you. And I also want to introduce myself. We've been having a guest speaker series, so it's been a while since I spoke. My name is Jam, one of the pastors here on staff. And today I'm going to be sharing with you just the word of God coming from the passage that we read in John chapter 11. Now, recently, I started rewatching one of my favorite shows. It's called The Sopranos. And if you are unfamiliar with that show, it's a show about a narcissistic egomaniac who is also a mob boss in New Jersey. And in one particular scene, he's having a conversation with a Russian immigrant with only one leg, and he tells her how much he admires her for not letting her disability slow her down. And this is her response. This is not word for word, but this is basically what she said. She said, "That's the problem with you Americans. You expect nothing bad to ever happen when the rest of the world expects only bad things to happen, and they are not disappointed. You have everything, and yet you still complain. You got too much time to think about yourselves." And when I zoom in even closer and look specifically at the evangelical world, this attitude of thinking that only good things are supposed to happen to us really just kind of is saturated in our world. And, you know, we have like, you know, things like hashtag blessed, right? And we assume or we think that if bad things are happening or if bad things are happening to the people around us, that it is a response from God as a punishment for our disobedience or our unfaithfulness. So we always think or we always look at bad things or trials or sufferings through the lens of, is God pleased with us or is God disappointed in us? And I think that's one of the reasons why it was so difficult, not only for myself, but maybe for a lot of this pandemic. It was a storm that we all were suffering through together. This idea of isolation, this idea of living in fear of a disease or a virus and just... and all the political unrest and everything else that seemed to be kind of falling down all around us. And it seemed like, what is going on, right? And I would jokingly, talk to my friends and say, oh, you know, I think it's the end of the world, right? And rapture is coming. And sometimes it still kind of feels like that, right? Especially last year during fire season when, like, you know, the whole, you know, sky was orange here in the Bay Area. Some scary stuff, right? But although we are suffering and going through these trials, and as we are making our way back, it is not without saying to say that maybe some of us are still going through trials and sufferings. Maybe some of us are still trying to heal or come back to a standardized level from all the difficult things that happened in our lives. Perhaps some of you lost friends or loved ones to COVID. Maybe perhaps we are suffering through the grief of losing our career momentum, right? Or the grief of just all the plans that we had going forward in the coming year before the pandemic hit. I know for myself, I turned 40 in 2020, and I have three young kids. My youngest kid is now 2.5, and my wife, she allowed me, she gave me permission to go on a trip of a lifetime. You know, me and my friend were planning a trip to Machu Picchu. We were going to go backpacking and, you know, like hike up the mountains and stuff and, you know, do cool, like adventurous stuff. And then COVID hit and I'm like, oh man, that sucks, right? But, and that's just a, you know, very peripheral thing, right? Many of us, we struggled and we suffered through really deep heartaches. Perhaps some of you just really suffered through the fact that you lost a, you know, year and a half of life. You know, a lot of children, a lot of students suffered through the fact that they had to not go to school for about 2 years and be in distance learning. You know, I know my kids always complain about the fact that they don't like school, but the reality is they don't like the homework, but they enjoy going to school. You know, it's an opportunity for them to socialize, to learn how to be independent, to grow and mature. And especially for high school students, they missed out on dances and, you know, parties. And for college students that were going into their freshman year, they missed out on their entire freshman year of living a life of independence. And I think even besides that, there's a lot of, you know, simple joys that we've missed out on. You know, one of the things that I really realized that's kind of like a big deal to me is to be able to eat pho at the restaurant. You know, it's just not the same when you order it. You know, like when you order pho, you know, this Vietnamese noodle soup to go, the noodle comes all hard and clumpy, and no matter how hard you try, it doesn't really separate correctly, you know? And if you boil it too much, then it gets all soggy, you know? And then on top of that, it just doesn't taste the same, and then you got to clean it up. I just didn't realize how important the cleanup part is, right? But to go to a restaurant and just have the bowl put right in front of you, and then even now, post-COVID, like, the sauces aren't there. You have to ask for the sauces, and, you know, like, it's completely different, right? But I digress, right? On a more serious note, I think a lot of times, and many of us, we've dealt with the last year and a half, going on 2 years, and perhaps we don't see an end in sight. And maybe some of you that are sitting here today, perhaps you come with a burden in your heart, filled with grief and anger and anguish, and you're wondering, where is the light at the end of the tunnel? But now as we begin to start meeting again in person, I think one of the benefits that we have of being able to gather together as a community in person is the opportunity to be able to minister to one another as we all suffer and struggle through the hurts and the pains that this world offers. Now, Tim Keller, who is a pastor in New York, He says this. He says there's a very important distinction between those who are currently going through suffering and those who are not. And this is his quote. He says, while the afflicted person may cry out using philosophical questions such as, why do you allow such things, God? The real concern is personal survival. How can you survive it? How can you get through it without losing the best part of yourself? And in other words, I think a lot of times what happens is that the person who is going through suffering, we might outwardly ask these philosophical and theoretical questions of why is this happening or why do you allow evil to happen? But in reality, what the person who is going through suffering is really caring about is finding the tangible solution to their suffering. And I think a lot of times as Christians or even just as people, if we are not the ones going through suffering, we stay in the philosophical realm of, hey, look on the bright side. Hey, you know, God's in control. Don't worry about it. You know, let Jesus take the wheel. But the person who is actually struggling, who is actually suffering, what they really desire is the answer to the or a solution to the very problem that they're going through so that they may be able to survive this storm. I think the reason why I was drawn to this passage today is because I know that not only myself, but many of us, maybe we are searching for this solution. How can we survive through the hardest times of our lives? How can we come to the end of the road of this great trial and suffering and unknown and anxiety and depression that maybe some of you are going through? So today, as we look at the passage from this New Testament in John, we are going to really see how Jesus ministers to those that are in grief, how Jesus ministers to those that are suffering. And we want to kind of look at his approach and see how we can model our ministry after Jesus to help those who are struggling. So we will see that in order for us to minister to those that are struggling and also to ourselves during a very difficult time, that we must understand the presence of Christ in our lives, that we must also understand the call for us to be present with him in the midst of our suffering, and lastly, the power of Christ to restore all things. So the first point that I want to talk about is the presence of Christ. Now we are visiting a very familiar story. For those, especially that have grown up in the church, even if you have not grown up in the church, perhaps you have heard the story of Jesus raising his friend Lazarus from the dead after he's been dead for 4 days. Right? And this is a story that is kind of unbelievable because, number one, I've never seen anyone be resurrected from the dead, right? I've never seen anyone come back to life, especially after being dead 4 days. And I'm not a doctor. I don't claim to be one. I've only watched like ER, maybe 2 episodes of that. Are you too young to know ER? Grey's Anatomy, okay? Grey's Anatomy. But he's been dead for 4 days, so you know that he is dead. And what happens previous to the beginning of this story is that Jesus, he is near the Jordan River. This is roughly about 150 miles away from the town of Bethany. And while he's there and while him and his disciples are doing ministry there, word comes to him that his friend Lazarus is very ill. And, you know, this is before Twitter, before emails, before the age of information. So basically, if you're that far away, to be able to send a messenger, to be able to send a message meant that it was something very important. So the message that Lazarus was very ill was not just that, oh, he has a stomach ache or, you know, that he's just a little sick. No, it was that he was on his deathbed, that he was very close to death. And as Jesus receives this message, he waits a couple more days. And then once he realizes, once he knows that Lazarus has died, he says, let us go to Judea. Right? And here's the funny thing, right? Interesting thing is that he gets a message that Lazarus is dead or Lazarus is sick. But then all of a sudden he knows that Lazarus has died. How does he know that? And it speaks to, again, the power and deity of Jesus Christ, that he knows things that we ourselves in our human minds cannot know. And once he knows that Lazarus has died, he tells his disciples, get up, let us go to Judea. And the disciples are wondering, what the heck? Why are we going to Judea? Jesus, I thought we were staying here because the religious leaders were trying to kill you the last time we were there. They were trying to stone you for the blasphemy, you know, and saying that you were speaking blasphemy. But Jesus and his disciples, they get up and they make the trek down to Bethany to go to visit his friends who are going through this traumatic experience of losing their brother. And just as a side note, I think one of the most important things that we see here in this passage is that Jesus was willing to forego his own safety, that Jesus was willing to forego his own comfort, to go into dangerous territory, to be able to minister to people who he knew were suffering and grieving. And I think one of the muscles that we need to kind of, re-exercise and to be able to kind of, jumpstart again after this pandemic is really our ability to be able to put ourselves in uncomfortable situations for the sake of ministering to others. You know, because I'll be honest, during the pandemic, it was kind of the most comfortable time of my life. You know, I just stayed home. I hung out with my kids. You know, I tried new recipes and I didn't have to deal with, the drama of the people around me. It was just like me and my kids, you know, that was it. And to be able to kind of restart and understand what does it mean to be able to put myself in the midst of people who are struggling and suffering. I think that's an exercise that we all need to practice. And we see that in Jesus. But not only that, what I want to get into in the main point here, this first point, is the presence of Christ in the midst of someone who is suffering, who is grieving. And in order for us to see that, I want to see his interaction with Mary, one of the sisters of Lazarus. So now we jump down to verse 32 in chapter 11. It says that she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And this moves Jesus deeply within his soul. And it says that Jesus wept. Jesus wept. And the question is why did he cry? Why was he moved to weeping? Why was he deeply moved by the fact that he sees Mary kneeling and crying? He wasn't crying because Lazarus was dead, because he knows that he's going to bring Lazarus back to life. He wasn't crying because he misses his friend Lazarus so much. No, Jesus is weeping for, I think, a couple reasons. Number one, because he sees the pain and the anguish that sin and death has brought into his creation. He is there seeing visibly the very grief of one of his children, weeping at the pain of what sin has brought into this world, the death and the anguish that is bringing into her soul, and he is just so angry and moved by this. But also he weeps because he empathizes with the pain that Mary is facing. He is empathizing with her because he is no stranger to grief. He knows that as his friend Lazarus died and as the people around him are mourning, that not too far in the distant future, he too will suffer that same fate as he will die and hung upon the cross. And so there's that deep empathy in Jesus. So one of the first ways that we see how Jesus ministers to the people that are grieving is not only, number one, is he's physically present with them, but number two, he is emotionally and spiritually present with them. And this is one of the most exhausting things that we can do and provide to someone who is struggling. Now, one of the things that I realized how important that physical presence and physical gathering is that it, in the book of 1 Peter, he talks about just this idea of Jesus caring so much for him. And this is what he says, 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 7, he says, "We cast all our anxieties on him because he cares for us." Right? We cast all our anxieties on him because he cares for us. And this word to cast is the same word used to describe someone throwing a saddle upon a donkey or a horse. Now, this past week, my daughter was able to go to horse camp, and I saw horses, And I saw how big horses are. You know, like you forget, like these are majestic animals. And as I was thinking about this passage, I was like, man, like, am I strong enough to throw a saddle on top of a horse? Like that's a, you know, I'm watching the Olympics, that's like a discus throw, you know, or something, you know, it's like a hammer throw or something. And I realized the only way that you can correctly cast or throw a saddle upon a horse is that there has to be physical distance that's close enough, unless you are like super strong. And the reason why we are able to cast our anxieties upon Christ is because of the very physical presence that he has with us. In that same way, when we minister to people who are going through trials and suffering, how close are you to them? And not only that, I think the more important part is, are you emotionally present in their suffering? Here Jesus sees Mary weeping, and it brings him to tears. Here he sees Mary weeping, and he also cries with her. And I think a lot of times as Christians or as people, when we see someone struggling and deeply in grief, there's a part of us, maybe I'm just speaking just by myself, but if it you know, kind of hits you there, you know, same thing, right? Like you almost want to keep an arm's length away from them, because there almost seems like it's contagious, right? Their grief, you know, and you want to be able to provide wise sayings, but you don't want to really enter into the depth of their pain. But there's so much power, and there's so much nurturing love when we are able to practice this presence of deep empathy, just like Jesus showed Mary. Me and my family, we've been going through probably the most difficult part of a time of our lives, as something that I probably would have never imagined or thought of. Around April, my son developed a tic. You know, it was like a very, very violent neck tic. We went to the pediatrician for that, and they said it was just a transient tic. At worst, it might be Tourette's. And I, you know, I knew one kid in school that had Tourette's, and I just thought not too serious. He'll grow out of it. But a couple months after that, we noticed a almost drastic change in my son Isaac, as he was not the same. Like literally overnight, he was not the same person. So. So after doing some tests and seeing a neurologist, sorry guys, we will get through this. One of the tests came back positive for a strep bacteria, and this is something that's completely unknown to me previous to this, but basically he was diagnosed with a condition called PANDAS. It stands for Pediatric Autoimmune Neuropsychiatric Disorder Associated with Strep. And what happens in a small percentage of young children, when they get a strep infection in their throat, their autoimmune system or their immune system starts attacking not only the strep, but also their own brain. And because of this, one of the behavioral specialists said to me that basically it's a brain injury, that without any knowledge or any warning, he digressed into almost like a toddler state, where he was unable to control his emotions. He was unable to function properly. He would cry uncontrollably for no reasons. He was suffering from not being able to sleep. And on top of that, his neck tic was so violent that it caused so much pain for him that he didn't know what to do. And one of the most difficult things to be able to see was just the transition happen. It was night and day over a course of a week. And there was nothing that I could do to help him. There was nothing that me and my family could do to bring him relief. And being the typical Asian American man, I rarely cry. This is only my third time crying. Oh, thank you so much. I've only cried twice. The day I was born, when the doctor spanked me, and in 2008 when the Lakers lost to the Celtics in the finals, and coincidentally, 2008 was also the year I got married. I didn't cry then. But one day, my son was just going through one of his difficult moments, and all I could do was, there's no relief, and all I could do was just hold him, I just cried with him. And the interesting thing was that as I entered, and those tears were not because of my hardship. Those tears were because of his hardship. And as I entered into his grief and his pain, he suddenly stopped and he looked at me. And he said, "Daddy, why are you crying? Are you okay?" And at that moment, I realized how powerful it is for Isaac to see his own dad enter into his pain with him. In that very same way, I realized to see the King of the universe, the God of heaven and earth, come down into our pain, into our suffering, and suffer with us. How powerful that ministry is. And not only is our presence, not only is the presence of Christ in our suffering and our pain so powerful and so therapeutic, but also we have to ask ourselves, what does it mean for us to be present with Christ in the midst of our suffering? So that leads us to our second point, our presence with Christ in the midst of our suffering. See, presence is a two-way street. Tim Keller, in his book, Walking with God Through Suffering, he says this: not only is it important for us to know that God is with us and walking with us, but we must also focus on what it means for us to walk with God in the midst of suffering. And one of the first things that always interested me about this story about Jesus is, why does he wait 2 days before he finally decides to go see Lazarus? And I had to make the conclusion that may not be popular, but he waited 2 days to make sure that Lazarus was dead, right? He made sure that Lazarus died before he went to see him so that there would be no mistake about the state of death and life in Lazarus. And not only that, as we see the interaction between Jesus and Mary, we see one of Jesus filled with complete empathy and care. And then when we look at the interaction between Mary, Jesus and Martha, it seems almost very harsh. And here's the thing, Mary and Martha, they both basically say the exact same thing when they see Jesus. Martha, the first one to approach Jesus, she says, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." And when you look at the interaction, Mary stops there. Martha says that, and then she adds something else, and it almost sounds much more mature. She says, "But even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Mary just says, "If you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died," and then that's it, and she's crying. Martha says the same thing, and then she says something even more mature and says, "But I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you." Martha's response was more mature and more grounded than Mary's, and yet the response from Jesus seems a bit more harsh towards Martha. And he says, "I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, he shall live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. You're kind of like, whoa, Jesus, like, chill out. Like, Martha's brother just died. And she's like saying kind of like this cool, nice thing to you. Why you got to come at her all like, you know, like rebukingly? And you realize that Martha and Jesus in this conversation, what Jesus is asking of Martha is a question. Right? Do you believe in me? Do you believe in me? And when we see this confession, we see Martha's confession, she confesses to who Jesus is, not what he's about to do. This is Martha's response as Jesus says this to her. And Martha says, yes, Lord, I believe you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is coming into the world. And Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Like basically, hey, I could bring your brother back. And her response isn't, yes, Lord, I believe you can bring my brother back. Please heal him and bring him back. No, her response was a confession, not of the act that he is about to do, but about the person of who he is. You are the Christ, the Son of God, coming into this world. And this is Jesus' demand of Martha. Will you be present with me and follow me, even though you are in great trial and suffering and pain? Even though your brother has died, even though I waited 2 days, and maybe you could blame me for the reason why your brother has died, even though that has all happened, will you follow and trust in me? And I think that a lot of times we forget that even though Christ is present in the midst of our sufferings, even though Christ is the solution and the remedy to all of our pain and problems, we forget that he is also our Lord, and he demands and he commands us to walk with him through these pains, to walk with him through this suffering. We are a lot like Tony Soprano. We expect only good things to happen. And when bad things happen, we don't know how to react. But all throughout Scripture, when we look at issues and situations of pain and suffering, God says in many of those instances that it is for our good. Right? Romans chapter 8, verse 28 says, God causes all things to work together for the good of those who love him, to those who are called according to his purpose. James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4 says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect. And what I understood and what I realized, even now as me and my family are going through such a difficult ordeal, is that God did not place this situation to punish us. But God is putting us through this refining fire so that we can become more and more like him. You know, not only, this week has been pretty crazy. Not only are we dealing with everything with our son, you know, my wife had a crazy health scare, a cancer scare. She had pain in her lower abdomen. They found a cyst in her ovary, and it was irregular. So, you know, for like 48 hours, we thought she might have cancer. You know, and I'm like, great God, like you really want to like turn me into a sanctified person. Luckily, the test came back negative, but you know, she still is going to deal with the cysts in her ovaries. And all through this, it just put things into perspective for me. Jesus saying to me, do you believe in me that I am the resurrection and the life? And the question goes to you as well. In the midst of your pain and suffering, do you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God? The one who has power and authority over all things. The one who if you have placed your faith in him, he has promised to care and love you for all eternity. And I can honestly say that as difficult as this is, and as I wish that this would just go away and everything would just go back to the way things were, that this has been a great wake-up call and allowing me to see from a very heavenly perspective of what my life here on this earth is for. That God did not put me here so that I can you know, just live a comfortable life. That God not put me here so that I can live the American dream. But that God, he's working in my life so that I can have a better perspective to see that my family is much more greater than my career ambitions. That having and leading a healthy church is much more important than having and leading a big, famous church. That relationships with people matter so much more than the fame and notoriety that we might receive from social media. That intimacy is so much greater than influence. And I can honestly say that through the difficult time, that walking with Jesus through the sufferings of me and my family has helped me become more and more like him. C.S. Lewis, in the book, The Problem of Pain, says this: the human spirit will not even begin to try to surrender self-will as long as all seems to be well with it. Now, error and sin both have the property that the deeper that they are, the less their victim suspects their existence. They are masked evil. Pain is unmasked, unmistakable evil. Every man knows that something is wrong when he is being hurt. In that same way, the pain and the suffering that me and my family are going through has truly unmasked and unveiled for me the power of Christ and his sovereignty and his control in our lives, in all things, both good and bad. And that leads us to our third and final point. The power of Christ truly restores us. See, the reason why the presence of Jesus in the midst of suffering brings so much comfort is because it is coupled with the cosmic power of the King of the universe. Now, one of the first things that I did once, you know, I kind of suspected my son to have a pandas disorder was I joined the Facebook group, you know, like pandas parents and you know, people with pandas. And right away, it brought some nurturing healing, knowing that I was in on it. You know, we weren't going through it alone, that there were others who were also suffering and struggling through it. But the more and more I see posts being uploaded and people, you know, kind of venting and talking about the struggles that they're having with their family, it started kind of like really messing me up even more. And I realized it was because even though the presence of this online community was somewhat helpful, that it came with no power whatsoever. That they were unable to help in any way. I mean, number one, they're not there to help me. But number two, they're powerless to do so. We're all in the same boat. Now, when we first kind of heard about my son and found out about my son, one of the families of our church, they reached out to us and they wanted to take us out to dinner. We were kind of hesitant. We weren't sure if our son would be able to handle going out to dinner, but we did. And you know, they were truly, it was such a nurturing time. They were someone who also in their young age had a child that was, you know, terminally ill. But, you know, by the grace of God, they were able to, you know, be healed. And you know, now she's all grown and has kids of her own. And just that empathy and that ministering was so therapeutic to us. But towards the end of the night, you know, they started asking us, what are the next steps for our son Isaac? And we told them, you know what, there's no appointments. You know, just the next appointment that we might possibly get is 6 months down the road. And they said, oh, where at? And we said, you know, Stanford Children's Hospital. And they said, oh, we know a board member at Stanford Children's Hospital. Let us reach out to them and then we'll get back to you. The next day they emailed us along with the board member and we were able to get an appointment the next week. You know, and the reason why I share this story is because their presence and empathy towards us was so nurturing, but to know that they had the ability and the authority to be able to make something happen that we ourselves couldn't do brought us so much joy and comfort. I mean, there was kind of like grief and relief. There was complete relief knowing that our son is going to get seen 6 months before the actual date that was told to us. There was a little bit of grief knowing that, man, there's so many people who can't get appointments, and it's all about who you know. Not you know, not what you're suffering through. And that kind of, you know, messed me up a little too. But I was grateful. I was grateful. And what we see here in Jesus, in this story, is that he's not just a powerless, nurturing figure who was present with us in our grief. The reason why he brings so much comfort and joy and peace is because he is the king of the universe who will not only be present with us, but who has the power to restore all things. And that's what he does with Lazarus. He says, where is Lazarus? Take me to him. I'm like, dude, he's going to stink. He's been dead for 4 days. He goes there and he says, Lazarus, come out. And what Mary and Martha and all the Jewish people that were present saw, as they saw Jesus weeping, as they saw Jesus making the journey 150 miles to see his dead friend, now they were seeing not only his presence, but his power to restore all things. And Lazarus rose from the dead, walked out of the tomb, and he was alive. And that power was just a glimpse of the ultimate power that Christ would display upon the cross. Because even though Lazarus came back to life after 4 days, what happens? I don't know when, he died again. But Jesus, as he hung upon the cross, as he took the burden of the sins of the entire world upon his shoulders, as he was laid in the tomb, dead, he rose again to ultimately display the power of restoration. The gospel message that in Christ, he can restore all things. That the pain and the struggles and all the trauma that you have gone through or maybe will go through in the future, that in Christ, there will be a day when all that will be restored to brand new. And the evidence of that is in Christ. The fact that he rose again from the dead and he is still alive today, sitting at the right hand of the Father. All of his pains and all the suffering that he suffered in this world completely restored. And that is the promise that he has for me and you. Perhaps you are pained by the loss of loved ones, loss of relationships. Your family or children may be going through things that is unexplainable. Your job or your career, not the way that it was supposed to be, or the fact that you had to get married during COVID, or the fact that you broke up during COVID, or there's all these things that we suffer through. And the promise of Jesus and his power is not only I am here with you, Emmanuel, God with us, but I have the power to restore all things brand new. And that is what brings us peace and joy in the midst of our suffering. Now, it's been over a year and a half since the last time we were able to come together and partake in the Lord's Supper together. And today, what we are going to do is we're going to be able to, in person, have communion and to remember that the presence of Christ will always be with us.